It's always great for me to be here. And especially to what I like to think of as offer some complementary practices to what you might already do, practice, know about. Maybe even integrate a couple of the fields that you're in or interests that you have. But to offer resources and practical means, skillful and practical means that that through my experience help many of us navigate the waters of life. You know, we're very fortunate in many ways to be in this time that we're in. To have been able to had the benefit of many of our traditional Dharma practices, or more traditional, but Dharma practices practiced by many before us and passed to us. You know, one person, one heart at a time. It's pretty incredible when you think of that. And so we are all backed by countless beings who have been alive and been in whatever, you know, circumstances in their lives they've been in, and offered us the paths, the different kinds of means and practices that helped them navigate, helped them understand, helped them to directly experience the mind, the heart, the body, in whatever time we're living in. And so I think sometimes we think, oh, well, it's harder now. You know, it's harder to be alive now, or it's harder to stay calm and at ease now, and it's harder to be balanced now. Well, I would just say, is that really true? We don't know. We don't know. Certainly we have difficulties, yes, of which I'm sure you can name many. And probably partly why you're here today. The good news is that there are ways that we can hold whatever it is that we're working with in our lives. How many of you are new to meditation practice or Dharma practice? That's great. Hopefully I won't ruin it for you. That's great. And many of you, I think, are clinicians of some kind, which is fantastic. I welcome you. And I'm sure some of you are here just for your own practice to help you negotiate, navigate, be with emotions and the body. Yeah? We could work with these two topics for the rest of our lives, obviously. And we have been up until now, you know, in the best ways that we have been able. So I really like to begin by honoring you and having you honor yourselves for being here. You know, you took a day, which is never easy, to come up here, drive up here, however you got up here. And I think probably, even if you're working with other people who have emotional aspects that they would like to work with, you're here to help them, you're here to help yourselves. And that's a beautiful thing. So just take a moment, let that sink in. And also, you know, I think it's time, it's beyond time, it's past time. Now, again, I want to honor the people that have come before me who have taught these practices. It's not like I'm inventing anything. I'm not. I've certainly experienced everything that I'm going to share with you. And, you know, sometimes we have our own take on things, and I'll present that to you, of course. But it's time for us to be more in our bodies. And I say that because where we are in space and time right now, and in this culture that we're living in, we're not really taught or invited into our bodies, at least on a somatic way or a somatic way of experiencing things, or in a felt sense way, when we're younger. Not so much. It's just starting to shift, as some of you know. But we weren't brought up necessarily to know the body, except for know when it didn't get us around, when it wasn't well, when we didn't like it, when it wasn't serving the mind, you know, sort of navigating the mind getting around. And with technology, with the speed of life right now, the body is a great balancing element to our lives and really can help us and bring us into the present moment instantly. And it can also help us understand our own mind and our own bodies a little bit better, because it's a mirror. It's a mirror to the mind. It's a mirror to the heart. It's almost as if we wear our mind and our hearts in our bodies, or on our bodies, however you want to look at that. And so we'll be investigating this, thinking about it, talking a little bit about it, and certainly not thinking about it, just practicing with this as we go about our day. So because emotions are, you know, can be fairly loaded, I always like to have additional eyes and ears with me. Just because this is a fairly large group. It doesn't look so large in this room because there's a lot of space, but we have close to 100 people. And although I've been teaching for a while and I'm pretty good at seeing things in the room, I like to have a little extra support myself, just in case you might need some help or you might need an ear or some eyes. And so I've invited Krista to come with me. And Krista is a clinical psychologist. She and I have been working together for some time now. And in case you need some support, whatever that might look like for you, you can come to either of us during the day. And also, as we navigate the territory of the body and the landscape of emotions, you might want to go take a walk. You might want to say, no thanks, I don't want to go there right now. You might want to even lie down. And that's okay. So the doors are open, and I mean that metaphorically and literally, for you, if you've reached a limit of your comfort level and you'd like to go out and get some air, or a tea, or water, or whatever, you can do that. There's no shame in that at all. In fact, I would like you to do that, not just because you feel like getting up and walking out, but so that you can really consider how you're doing right now. And this day is not about overloading anybody, hopefully. So just know that that's okay. I want you to take care of yourselves. We will take a break for lunch at about 12:45. And we'll take a bio break. It's a couple points during the day, but if you need to go out and at any time, please go. Feel free to do that. So without talking anymore, I'd like us to begin by doing a practice and just to settle into the room and with each other and ourselves. So to practice meditation, mindfulness, which is what we'll start with, mindfulness. For those of you who are a little newer to practice or new to practice, your posture doesn't have to be anything in particular, except that it's suggested that we sit upright, unless your body needs the support of lying down on the floor, which I've already said is okay. But to sit upright and not be stiff. So we don't have to look like what we might have seen in a magazine or a book, you know. But we do want to sit up fairly straight without rigidity, just because it keeps energy a little bit flowing more easily and keeps the mind a little bit more bright. So just take a comfortable posture, comfortable for your body right now. And we can practice with our eyes opened, and we can practice with our eyes closed. Different traditions teach that differently. In the Zen tradition, in the Tibetan traditions, the meditation practice is done with the eyes cast or gaze cast open about 4 or 5 feet in front of us, so that you're looking down and just gazing, not staring, but just gazing, relaxing the eyes. And more in the Vipassana tradition, the insight tradition of which Spirit Rock is, we close the eyes. So, you know, whatever works for you is fine. Fully close the eyes or cast your gaze down. Either way, be purposeful in how you're sitting or lying down. You're doing it on purpose, considering how your body is being placed, the shape that it's in. And softening all around your eyes, whether they're fully closed or somewhat open. I try softening the back of your eyes, relaxing your eyelids. Even softening your face. Notice the room that we're in together right now. One of the initial things that we can begin to notice about the room, the space that we're in, is the temperature of the room. Feel that on our skin. Another thing we can notice about the room that we're in is the light. Whether it's coming in through eyes somewhat open or fully closed, the light streams in through the eyelids to the eyes. So the temperature, the light, is because of where we are in time and space. We also can hear sounds. Sounds in the room and sounds outside the room. And just like temperature or sensation, and just like sight, the sounds that we hear right now are specific to where we are, time and place, and this moment. We can also touch in a little bit more closely to our bodies. So of course it's the body that's feeling the temperature, noticing the light, hearing sounds. And then there's lots and lots of sensations going on in the body. You might notice, to begin with, just the weight of your bones. Maybe you notice the clothing on your skin, the weight of it or the texture, or maybe even the temperature. Maybe you notice areas of the body that are tight, areas of the body that feel more open, soft, or hard, tingling or tickly, relaxed or tense, and then lots of variations on those themes. And part of sensation is noticing the culmination of sensations that we call and feel as breath. So in noticing the body, we can notice the breath in the body. The breath that we're not responsible for, but that we can feel. Gravity moves breath in and out of our bodies. And we sense it typically in the nostrils, the air streaming in and out, maybe somewhere in the chest. You might even feel a little rising and falling of the chest, or you might feel the air as it goes down the throat and into the chest. Or maybe you sense it a little bit lower in your belly, and you feel the belly move rhythmically. There are a lot of areas you can feel your breath. It doesn't have to be in those main ones. Where do you sense it? Let's take a few minutes and just sense our breath or the different sensations in the body. Inviting ourselves to begin again or come home again or start again whenever we've noticed that we've wandered away, which will happen. That's okay. So come back to the anchor or the home base of your breath or different sensations in your body. Whenever you notice that you've strayed or wandered, just for now, just for a few minutes, and we're doing this all together. So, one thing that we'll be doing today is moving in and out of practice. So our practice periods may not be, our silent practice periods at least, may not be as long as you might find if you come for a more typical day long here, or if you've been on retreat. It'll be a little bit shorter, because what I'd like to do is offer you some different tools and different ways to hold and frame what you're experiencing and move in and out of practice like that, so that we're trying different things together to allow you to understand cognitively and why you might even want to practice something, and then to practice it and see how it goes. Because so much of, I think what we skip often is our direct experience of things. Look, we're very good at absorbing information, right? Reading or listening to or being guided by what other people say is the right way to go, or this, do it like this, or try, you know, this goes first and this goes second. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what often we will skip is trying it on for ourselves and say, is that really good for me or right for me, or is it helpful for me now? And not to even like toss the baby out with the bathwater and say, oh, well, no, I don't like this, so I'm not going to do it. But to have a basket basically full of different things that we can pull from when they might be best suited for the place that we're in, but also to put aside the ones that aren't working today because we don't know, maybe they might work tomorrow. So it's not that we want to just be able to lightly, you know, pick like a buffet, I'll never try this again. Try it on. It may not be the right thing for right now, but it might be for later. So the only way we even know that is to try it on. So in other words, if we can try whatever is offered with some curiosity without deciding, and not because I'm telling you anything different or new or, you know, should be this way or should be that way, because I won't do that. If we try it on for ourselves, then we at least have had that direct experience. That's what builds wisdom eventually. And especially for those of you who offer different kinds of skillful means to others, I really hope that you try everything on yourself before you hand it over to somebody else. And that's not so much the way we go often, you know. So this being a place of practice, I'd like to really say that out loud. Let's try these things on for ourselves before we pass them along. And so even though what we're trying today will be for short periods, hopefully you'll take some of them home and try again at home. So I want to tell you just a little bit about my history with my body. And why I know a little bit about emotions. Because I learned the hard way. When I was young, in my 20s, I had a lot of physical issues, health issues. And I was, you know, a physical person, so to speak. I'd been practicing yoga for some time, and I'm an artist, so I was manipulating things, you know, was in a studio working a lot and running around and, you know, danced and all that kind of thing. It was a normal, well, what's normal? I don't know. Anyway, I felt that I was a normal young woman. And then I started to have pain, chronic pain. It became chronic. I had some pain. And I was in school at the time, and I, you know, never had been ill, really, except for the flu, cold sort of thing that we all go through. And so I found myself going from one doctor to another in New York City trying to figure out why I was in pain. And long story short, nobody could tell me why. So this kept going on, and I had several surgeries and took some different drugs, and it kept going and kept going, and it was over a long period of time. Eventually, it was said to me that by almost everybody that I went to see, well, this is all in your mind. We can't find an organic cause. And it wasn't that they weren't trying. They really were. There were a lot of good hearts and a lot of good minds trying to figure this out, figure what was going on with me out. But they weren't able to at the time. And so when I would say, well, okay, well, what do I do about my mind then? They didn't have anything to offer. So this kept going, and it was, you know, discouraging, to say the least, and I didn't feel well. I had some surgeries. They found out some organic causes, one organic cause for the pain, but once that was quote-unquote fixed, I still had pain. So I even went up to a place called Yale Pain Clinic and said, you know, help. And what they offered me was not something that I wanted to take them up on, which was just to block nerves in the area of my body that I was feeling pain. And I didn't want to go that way. So I decided that I needed to understand a little bit more about my mind. And that's when I started going on retreats. Well, I started practicing with a group first, and then I started going to retreats at Insight Meditation Society. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to see about this mind that's registering the pain. Well, not only did I start to understand my own mind, it sent me into a portal of incredible discovery that close to 40 years later I'm still on. And along the way, I found out a lot about my body, the body that I wasn't really in, the body that I didn't want to be in, because it didn't feel good. So some of you may relate to that. So I was as far away from my body as I could be because it was painful. And I didn't even realize that. And not only was I far away from my body, but I didn't really know too much about how I felt about my body or my life even, except for that it wasn't going well or the way that I wanted it to. And so during especially these first few years of sitting on many retreats, I was discovering a lot about my own mind and how it worked, the behavior of my mind. And then along with that, I was seeing, oh, right, there's these emotions that go along with thoughts. Oh, right, yeah. And then, oh, yeah, they have something to do with the body. And so I began teasing them apart, which was an interesting experience for me because, and maybe some of you relate to this, but, you know, the body feels like this, and then the heart and the mind think about it and feel something about it too, and I didn't realize that they could actually be separated out. Now, not to, you know, give them this grand divorce, and my body is this, and my heart is this, and my mind is this, but to be able to see how they entangled sometimes, how they communicated or didn't sometimes, and what could happen if I was able to negotiate or even separate them and not have one just pile over another or confuse the other or get so knotted together that I didn't see a way to separate them. So I detangled, and then I brought body, heart, and mind together. But it was in that process of detangling and separating, in a sense. I mean, we don't separate per se, because these are different facets of our experience of being alive. But by seeing them individually and uniquely, I could see where they influenced each other, how they talked to each other or not, and what might be the best way to hold each of these facets or components of of what I was experiencing anyway. And eventually came to know, oh, well, it's just not my experiences. This is the experience of a body. Oh, right. These aren't just my feelings. These are human feelings. Oh, it's not just my mind. This is what it's like to have a mind. And so I was able to hold my own personal experiences of what I'm going through, was going through at the time, experiencing in my life. But it led to this greater sense of, oh, wow, we're all in this together, aren't we? And there's just these variations on a theme. So our story is our story. Our history is our history. But we all have a body that is going to do what a body does. We all have a mind that thinks and imagines and plans and remembers. And we all have a heart that feels a lot of different things. Yeah? So it's been a very interesting path. And then add to it the Buddhist philosophy, which I'm going to give us a framework of, a very light framework of, to work with. There's a lot we can learn about being alive, and a lot we can, a lot of different ways that we can hold being alive that make being alive more curious, more interesting, definitely tolerable in the moments where we feel that they're not, and even just more intriguing, even in the times that aren't maybe so comfortable. So I know that's a lot to try to bring into one day, but we'll do our best in experiencing all of these different ways of knowing that we're alive, of being conscious of our consciousness, of even getting to know our emotions. So there's this, I imagine that you're all fairly familiar with the term somatic, yeah? A lot of times in Dharma teachings, or in the experience of retreat or day-longs here especially, we talk a lot about the felt sense. And the felt sense and somatic sense are fairly similar, if not pretty much the same. The way that we can experience our bodies through the felt sense is knowing sensation, feeling sensations as they are, but also noticing how a sensation sometimes, often, has a feeling tone with it. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, but it also could even have an emotion that goes along with it. Like, for instance, one of the reasons I was telling you a little bit about my story is that I had pain and I didn't like it and it made me mad. You see how that went together, right? I had pain, I didn't like it, made me mad, so it made me leave my body. So there's usually some sort of little trajectory that goes on, right? And I didn't realize I had choices about any of those things. So when we're in discovering the felt sense of the body, it's not just the sensation, but it's also the thought and the emotion that can associate or come along or tag along with it. So that makes sense, probably, doesn't it? I mean, you feel something in your body, and you have a thought and a feeling about it. Yeah. So somatically sensing is sensing. It's not necessarily thinking about. But we don't want to enter into the body realm or the emotional realm thinking that we have to dumb anything down. We want to be quite alive and quite awake to what we're noticing, and actually cognitively put things together. But we also want to be able to just notice an emotion for what it feels like and notice a sensation for what it truly is without the associated thoughts. Does that make sense? And a lot of times I think we end up, and I've sort of alluded to this earlier, we end up thinking about how we feel. And those are two different things. if you think about your body, it's not the same as being in your body. And maybe even some of you came because you're not in your body so much. And so I'm going to introduce my very favorite word, which is yet. You may not be in your body very well or very much yet. You may not be negotiating or holding your emotions as well as you'd like to yet. There's time. We have all day. And actually, if we make the intention, we have the rest of our lives, however long that is. You know. And that's where getting older is a luxury and a gift. Yeah. So we want to be able to sense the body in terms of just pure sensation. Now, this is mindfulness of the body. We want to be mindful of sensations in the body. What does that mean? It means that we want to pay attention on purpose, one of the most well-known definitions of mindfulness of any kind. Pay attention on purpose, but with kindness. We want to be kindly aware of sensations in the body. So right there, we're separating, in a sense, or looking at the option of how we're aware of something. Because we're making the intention to be kind about what we're going to notice or what we are noticing. So see how that right there is a little bit of a different way of holding awareness. So it's not that we're thinking about sensation, but we want to be, for instance, sensation. We want to be aware of sensation, but almost as if we're coming from the perspective of the heart. So I want to be aware of sensations in my body and aware of when I start to think about them, criticize them, judge them, or go on an emotional roller coaster with them, for instance. Okay? So we can begin to understand the body in terms of just pure sensation. There's a rising and passing away of sensation all the time. And a lot of times we're not attuned to the body because we're thinking about something or we're already in our destination or we're remembering a conversation that we had and we're replaying it and editing it out, as we will for sometimes 50, 60 years if you get to live that long. Same conversation, just different way of saying it over and over to yourself that makes you feel a little better but doesn't change anything, obviously. But so we're being aware of sensation as they arise, or a sensation or a group of sensations as they arise and pass away, like, oh, it's cool, oh, warm, tingly, tickly, pressure, lightness, spaciousness, tightness, etc. And the reason I want to bring this in right away is because, and we'll do a little practice around that, is because we want to be able to see how we will feel sensation or notice sensation. So feel, obviously in English, has a couple different meanings. Feel as in sense, feel as in emote. But we want to sense, have the feel sensations in the body, notice sensations in the body as they are. But we also want to notice sensations and the extra additional layer that we put on them. Now that could be a feeling layer, an emotional layer, or thoughts. Yeah, because and thoughts and feelings generally come together so closely that we don't even really see the difference between the two of them. But let's put that aside for now. So we want to be able to notice sensations as they are, and then notice what we do with them. Because if we really start to sensitize ourselves, which is within all of our purview. We're all capable of this. If we start to sense the body and become more sensitive to its signals and its language, then we can navigate, hold, and be with thoughts and emotions much more easily, believe it or not. Because, and I want to posit this out here or to you, and then we're going to try it on and see if you can actually, you know, get an experience of this, but it's said that the body feels a thought and an emotion or an emotion before it's actually cognized. So the body's always registering things, but we're typically not in tuned with it so much because we're thinking or feeling, emoting, or both, or becoming, you know, doing the next thing, thinking about what we have to do in the future. So we don't sense the body saying, hello, this is happening, and guess what, you know, in a minute you're going to get angry. We don't notice that until it's angry, or we're angry, or we're confused, or we're embarrassed, or we're jealous, or we're crying. And none of those things are bad. But if we pay attention, because I mean it's in the range, it's the rainbow range of emotions and thoughts that we all have, and we want to be able to embrace them. I mean, there's nothing wrong with an emotion, unless we think there is. But we want to be able to feel or sense the body as it's beginning to give us a little signal. Because that way, we can actually work with what that signal is offering. Like, oh, maybe I'll take a moment and go into the area of the body that's trying to say something to me, because eventually we get to know what it's trying to say. And just take a couple of breaths there, or even relax in there, soften in there, and guess what? Then it doesn't have to turn into a sensation that can take us away, sometimes for minutes, sometimes for days, and sometimes if it gets conditioned over and over again all the time. Does that make sense? Okay. So, bringing the body, the somatic experience of the body, the felt sense of the body into our practices is not just a compliment, but I think it really rounds it out. The body is always in the present moment, always. It's not in the past and it's not in the future. So by being in the body, we can bring ourselves into the present moment immediately. Now, when you're working with emotions, especially the stronger ones that are uncomfortable or maybe even ill-timed, like in the front of 100 people or at work or, you know, with your kid or whatever it is, we have this opportunity to say, ah, okay, I don't really need to go as far as this might have gone in the past. I can come in, I can work with the body a little bit. And it doesn't have to explode or implode in the way that it has in the past. So it's not that we get rid of an emotion, but we can work with the intensity of it. And eventually we tolerate emotions more and more of the time because we know, oh, okay, I can do this, I can do that. I can just be with it, recognize the emotion. And it doesn't have to take me down the same roads or control me anymore. Might not feel good, but I know I'll live through it. Been here before. So these are the kinds of things that we're going to do with these short practices is consider these opportunities and see how we might find ourselves using some of these skillful means. So, generally, people don't come to me or this kind of a day long or or if you're a clinician, because they feel really great. So I can kind of assume that some of you are here because some of the emotions that you're interested in working with are uncomfortable. That's okay. So we're going to be working a little bit more with the uncomfortable emotions, but as a contrast, we're going to work with really pleasant and comfortable emotions as well. Because we have a negativity bias, you're probably familiar with that, which means that the mind remembers all the things that didn't go well, like the conversation that we edit and edit and edit and replay, the situation that we go over and over and over again, the way someone looked at us just for a second and we'll never forget it. You know, it's funny how they get so caught and stuck in our minds, right? But they do. They're like little thorns sometimes. And genetically, we were meant to remember what was unpleasant because it generally kept us alive. If you put your finger in the fire, you'll get burned. Oh yeah, I'm going to remember. That was really unpleasant. I'm not going to do that again. But at this point in our trajectory of, you know, human incarnation, that little response or that beneficial memory has gone a little bit amok. And until we might think that something's going to be unpleasant and completely divorce ourselves from the experience. Or remove ourselves from the body, for instance, by looking at our phone over and over again, not even being in the body, or just checking out in one way or another. We're very creative about these ways that we check out. So, if we can be in the body, we come back to the present moment. That's a skill right there. And we want to learn to sense emotions in the body, not think about them necessarily. Just for today, anyway. Because most of us are pretty skillful at thinking about our feelings. And we tend to talk about it a lot. Right? So what we're going to be doing today, again, is going to complement talking about and fleshing out the story. It's not that the story isn't important and that talking about whatever is going on with us isn't important. It is greatly important. And there's also the ability, the skillful means, the capacity to sense emotions in the body as another way of being with them. So we want to be able to have as many tools as possible as we continue to be alive. There's this wonderful teacher, Uchiyama Roshi, who wrote this. He said, thinking means to be grasping or holding onto something with our brain's conceptual hand. But if we open it, if we don't conceive, what is in our hand falls away. Our true self also includes that which lets go. So I find this very, very powerful. Let's experiment with this for a moment. So if you were to consider an emotion that you feel a lot, but you're not so happy with feeling a lot, what shape would your hand take if it were holding that emotion? Just let one hand hold that emotion. It could be anger, it could be frustration, it could be sadness, it could be jealousy, it could be what have you. But let one hand hold that emotion or be shaped by that emotion. You can do this with your eyes opened or closed. And what would that feel like in your hand? Now try to push it away with your hand. What does that feel like? Okay, now release the hand. And notice what that feels like. Was there anything that you could sense in the rest of your body when you were holding the emotion or pushing it away? Did any other part of your body react or respond to that? Could you notice that? Some of us can, yeah? And what about when you opened the hand? How did that feel? Could you notice a difference inside your body somehow? So that's a somatic experience of an emotion. A short one, but a somatic experience of an emotion. One of my primary teachers, his name is Ajahn Amaro. He used to give an example like this. He would say, I can hold on, and he would, well, actually, I'll show you. He didn't hold coffee and do it. He held this, the striker. And he would say, okay, so here's the opportunity or the option that we have, the choices that we have with our mind. We can hold the striker really tightly and not let it go so it doesn't drop, right? And after time, my hand's going to get a little white, my fingers are going to get a little tired, and then eventually my arm will get a little tired and my shoulder will get a little tired. But I'm holding on to it. I'm not going to let it drop. Or we can hold it lightly and relax, and it's still not going to drop. And that really made a big difference for me, because there's a difference between contraction and activation. So our choice is how we're going to hold anything. Are we going to hold it tightly and try to push it away, or are we going to hold it so that it doesn't drop, let's say, metaphorically? And so the image of the hand holding on to something with our brain's conceptual hand is literally what the body is doing all the time. The body is the conceptual hand of the mind and heart, because again, emotions and thoughts tend to travel together. And so if we open it, we're not conceiving. Now what that means is that we're not thinking about it anymore. Now what gets us mostly into trouble? Thinking, overthinking. Not that we want to not think, but we tend to overthink. And so what we're going to do is balance out the thinking with the sensing, the doing with the being, observing things as they are, and also knowing what we do with what the way things are. Different skills of observation, different skills of witnessing, different skillful means of being conscious of our consciousness. Yeah? So relaxing the conceptual hand can be a somatic or felt sense experience. So let's practice sensitizing a little bit more, sensitizing ourselves to our bodies. So we'll do another short, relatively short. I mean, look, if you're new to meditation, this might feel like endless. If you meditate a lot, this is going to feel short. So time is obviously relative. But I'd like us to practice sitting with, or some of you, I think, because of physical reasons, need to lie down, and that's okay. But what I would suggest is that you don't lie down just because you can. Because what happens sometimes when we lie down to practice meditation is that we check out. And you just paid some money to come here, so maybe, you know, participate a little bit more fully if you can. But in all seriousness, checking out is not the is very different from checking in, right? So we want to be as awake and aware as possible, at least just for today. So we're going to begin to sensitize ourselves to our bodies in a way that is not with thoughts and emotions as much as possible. What I'd like us to practice is what is called mindfulness of the body. Now, mindfulness of the body doesn't have to include, at least the way that the Buddha taught mindfulness of the body, at least in the beginning, was to notice things like breathing in, I breathe in short, breathing in, I breathe in long, breathing in, I breathe shallow, noticing a sensation, I notice the sensation arise, shift and change, and pass away. It's not qualitative. So you notice your breath and you notice sensations, breath is sensation, without qualitative extra on it. So it could be, a breath could be long, it could be short. You're noticing an inhale, you're noticing an exhale. But also a sensation can be like hot or warm or cool, light or soft. That doesn't mean, oh, I don't like this heat. Oh, bring me more soft. There's not a quality on it as much as possible. We want to step back and notice the sensation and the breath as it is without adding emotion or thought process to it. Does that make sense? Okay, so most of you know this, but in case you don't yet. So let's sit, and if you're comfortable, close your eyes. If not, you can cast a soft gaze down. And just for now, we're going to practice noticing sensations as they are. We're going to be mindful of the body, mindful of the breath, paying attention purposefully, but with kind awareness and some curiosity. What can I sense in my body right now? What's it like to have a body right now? As you begin, just relax the body on the chair or on the floor as much as you can so that you literally feel that you're taking your seat. Notice the contact of your body to the chair, or your body to the cushion, or your body to the floor. What does that contact actually feel like? Is there weight or lightness, heat or coolness? Maybe there are sensations like tingling or tickling or contraction or softness. See if you can touch into whatever you're noticing just as it is. Allowing different sensations to invite you to pay attention to them. Whatever calls your attention is fine. Could be something in your feet. Could be something in your shoulder. Then you notice a breath. Then you notice your belly, etc. Keeping the mind as curious as possible to the sensations that you can sense and feel. And when you notice that your mind starts to think about what you're sensing, illustrate it, wonder about it, like it or not like it, and then just notice that and go back to the sensation or the next sensation that you will sense. And just drop the thoughts and the feelings as best as you can, and go back to just observing the sensations as they are. You might notice that your breath is a culmination of sensations. There's movement, coolness, warmth. Sometimes the breath tickles. Sometimes it's soft. These are all sensations that we can be awake and aware of, awake to and aware of. So it could be noticing breath, could be noticing your right toe. Noticing skin, feeling bone. What's it like to notice your body right now? So how was that in terms of, do we have a mic? I just want to take a couple of bring a couple of your responses into the room before we move on. What was that like to notice sensations as they are? What was your experience of that?
It was both lovely and painful, because just sitting, there's a lot of pain in my body, and it was, I found myself wanting to just move. So it was interesting,
yeah.
Working with not doing the best I could to keep noticing when I was kind of starting to have an aversion to it, and just kind of play with how to respond to what I was noticing without thinking about it. I guess that was.
And what did you? How did you respond then?
Well, so as I said, I would just see.
You were moving.
I would do little movements and just
okay.
kind of try micro movements and see
uh-huh.
sort of what would help. And it was a challenge to not go into that aversive place, even without thoughts. Like you can kind
right.
of have an aversive reaction to pain without
yeah.
a thought coming. It's just more like ugh.
Right.
So
but
that was a lot I was working with.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. And maybe some of you will find this as a commonality, is you were using your conceptual hand to move. So see if this resonates at all. Especially when we're not comfortable, we may not want to, you know, so you were purposefully trying not to think about it, analyze it, right? But you were moving. That was thinking about it. Because what you were doing is you were reacting and trying to make it go away. So it's the body's way of thinking about it, in a sense. Do you know what I mean? And that's interesting. Now, it's challenging to be still with discomfort. Yes, it does. It can. Not always. Because the opposite can also occur. It may build and it also may let go. So this is really interesting. Thank you for that example. Anybody else feel that when sensations are not pleasant, especially that there you want to move or you want to do something or you want to check out? I mean, it's so common. Now, if we can hold that as, okay, that's what I did. That's what I do. Rather than chastise or criticize, then we're already ahead of the game here. Okay? Because what I'm pointing out is so common that it makes it kind of interesting. You can say, I do that too. The conceptual hand is, let me push that away by jiggling it out. Or, you know, moving or what I just did, scratch the itch. Yeah? So it's another layer that you want to be aware of, not putting a negative or positive spin on it at all, but just to be aware of that. If possible. But not always. Because there, especially if something is chronic or acute, then you want the option of turning towards something else. I think, and a lot of times we'll notice about how our mind works, is that we have less options than we really want to have. And so we're trying to build choice here, is one way I look at what we're doing. I want to have the choice of being able to tolerate and stay with unpleasant sensations, unpleasant emotions, unpleasant thoughts, let's say. And I also want to know when I've done that enough, I'm running myself around the same story or block over and over again, and I can say, you know what? I know how this goes because I've repeated it so many times, and now I'm going to turn towards something that's more skillful, healthy, and helpful. But if it's just a reaction, I don't like it, let me get out of here, I don't like it, let me move. I don't like it, let me scratch. I don't like it, let me check out. And then we're not in control of our mind anymore, or our emotions, or even not, we can control our body, but we're more taken over than we've just lost our choices. But in order to have the choice of anything, really, we need to notice our responses and reactions to them, even on the more subtle level, which is what you just described. So that was much more subtle to call it the conceptual hand, but it still is. So that's fantastic. Thank you. Let's take one more. Did anybody have an observation? Hang on for the mic.
So I'm a clinical psychologist, and I'm specifically a cognitive behavioral therapist, so I'm well-versed in noticing negative thoughts, rewriting them, and I have a practice of this.
Right.
That's somewhat automatic at this point, but it hasn't been working well for me in my body. And so I notice that my habit is to notice I'm having a negative thought about what I'm feeling, or that's what just happened in this mm-hmm. moment. And then my next impulse is to rewrite it into some story that's going to be okay, or that has a positive spin that has also not been working. And this was the first time that I tried what you're telling us to do, which is just to observe it with sort of curiosity and neutrality. And I noticed that as I leaned into it, it dissipated. So it was a very interesting experience of sort of removing the cognition almost entirely from it, being with it, and having this experience of my body feeling like it listened and let go.
And how do you describe, that's fantastic, thank you. How do you describe leaning into it?
So I think with the impulse to write a positive story, it's still pulling myself back into my mind and away
that's right.
from my body. And
yes.
So I think this was more along the lines of what you described as teasing out, that I was able to free myself of this thought or that thought, even if it were a more pleasant thought, and move myself purely into the feeling state, if that makes sense.
Excellent, yes. So if I can re-say what you just said, I think what you just said was that rather than doing something around it, which is to make another choice, but to make a choice to think about it in a different way, whether it be negative or positive, you know, because we go both, that's your habit, is to put a more of a, you know, oh, maybe I'll put a positive spin on this. You just went in and sensed it. Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. So sometimes this is what can happen, hopefully more of the time than less of the time, is that when you actually pay attention to what the body is sensing and telling you, it's not that you're listening to a story about it, but you're directly sensing the sensations. Now, when we do that, the story doesn't have to keep trying to knock on the door and tell us something. It's been cognized, recognized, and paid attention to, but just in a different way. So it's kind of like, I like to think sometimes of my emotions and my stories as like children that need to be heard. And if I don't pay attention to them, they just get louder. And I had one teacher talk about, one of my Tibetan teachers, Sokhne Rinpoche, would talk about nagging thoughts and emotions as the bully. And he would say, you know, it's like, you know, this thought is coming, or this feeling is erupting. And we could even think of it as a sensation. And it's like, oh no, I don't want that thought to come into my mind. I don't want it to take over. I know where it takes me, or that feeling. I know what that feeling's going to do. Or, oh no, I'm starting to feel discomfort in my body, and I know where that's going to go to. Oh shoot. And we start to quake. But he said the bully, that thought, that feeling, that sensation, unpleasant sensation, is like the bully is downstairs and, you know, you're quaking, you hear it, and it's coming up the stairs, boom, 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 and you're like, oh no. And he said, and it's at the door, and it's boom, boom, boom at your door, and you're like, no. He said, don't worry. Go to the door. Open the door. Say, hey, how are you? No thanks, not right now. And just very gently close the door and go back to what you're doing. That's acknowledging. that's just for a moment, like not saying, hey, I love you, I like you even, but I hear you, I see you, and you know what? No thanks, not right now. The recognition, the acknowledgement is really most of the time what it takes for something to say, oh, okay. Now, you know what? It'll come back. But if we acknowledge it over and over again, it doesn't have to yell. You've probably all heard Rumi's Guest House over and over again. It's probably the most commonly read poem in modern spiritual history. And one of the lines is, to welcome all guests. And when I was first practicing, I thought, no, I don't want those guests. And the person that wrote this, I didn't really know who Rumi was at the time, he never was in chronic pain. He has no idea about the guests that I experience. I have to keep those guests out. Now, this could be emotions, this could be feeling, you know, sensations, this could be whatever is chronic and you know, fairly relentless. He doesn't know about these. These are mine, you know, these are really bad. Well, eventually I learned that if I welcome, I don't have to like all the guests, but if I at least allow them to come in and say, hey, they don't stay very long. That's what you noticed. So what we recognize and allow and not tighten around, push away, or try to hold in with the conceptual mind or the somatic expression of mind and heart, there's space for it. Guess what? It can come and it can go. So that's really great. Thank you. I'll take one more burning. Is it a question? Good, okay. And then we'll move forward if you don't mind.
I'm curious about what you said. I've been noticing in my own home practice, sometimes with very difficult body sensations. Yes, sometimes when you give them space, they lessen. And then you said sometimes they don't, right? And I'm wondering about a decision not to focus on them, stay with them. I'm wondering, you know, sometimes I'll experience, oh, it gets, you know, you pay attention and it gets really strong, and mm-hmm. that's kind of good because then it can dissipate. And other times, no. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of wondering about that. You were talking about like thoughts. Well, I've been around this before, but
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if you have any comments.
I do. I mean, it's such a great question. Can you relate to that? It's like, when is it beneficial to turn towards or turn away? Is this sort of what you're saying? Well, I look at it one way I like to look at this is this helpful or is this harmful? Is this skillful or unskillful? In more of the Buddhist terminology, it would be, is this wholesome or unwholesome? And this is where kindness and kind awareness come in, and compassion, self-compassion. Because eventually we begin to see where we create harm for ourselves, where we cause harm, whether it's through our thoughts or our feelings or things that we're doing in the body or all, you know, in all of those ways. We see the roads that we've walked on many, many times that lead us to the same pain, the same discomfort. So there's suffering and then there's pain on top of it, right? So eventually, this is why we want to watch something, watch ourselves, observe, witness, be with ourselves, our mind, our feelings, our body, all, you know, everything that we can be consciously aware of over and over and over again. Because if you're with something, it doesn't matter what it is, over longer and longer periods of time, you get to know it. And you will start to sense, oh, actually I'm creating harm by staying with this. I'm creating harm by leaving it, whatever it is. We begin to know how to take better care of ourselves, how to care about ourselves because we actually like and then love ourselves. And that's a That's a cultivation, let's say. So sort of test it out, like, is it kind for me to stay with this right now? Or is it not so kind? I mean, that could be just the simple litmus test to begin with. And I think that'll lead you to greater and greater understanding of when you're checking out on purpose, when you're checking out not on purpose, because it's really a development of wisdom. In fact, I think it's, I don't really like to paraphrase quotes because I don't remember them per se. I don't want to put anybody else's words in the wrong way, but let's see if I brought this. Yeah, so this is from one of our favorite people, Jack Kornfield. He says, wisdom knows what feelings are present without being lost in them. Yeah, so right there, we want to know, well, what are our thoughts? What are our feelings? Is this kind? Is this unkind? Jen, when we first start to take a look at anything, we're not quite sure because we have identified with it so much that we believe it's true. Now, things can feel real but not be true. And so that's just a little bit more of a perspective on it, but similar way of looking, let's say. Does that help? We'll look at this a little bit more. So let's just, when is it helpful to dig in, and when is it helpful to turn away and do something that is not taking you down the same road? This you have to feel out over time. We don't generally know that about ourselves, maybe in the beginning, but we will. We will. It's a very layered question and a good one. Thank you. I'm going to try a different way of experiencing the body that may or may not be helpful for some of you. And I always say that because you know what? This may be helpful, this may be helpful, or may not be helpful because I'm a tad bit of a contrarian. And when I was first doing retreats, you know, I was in my 20s, and I would hear people suggest things, and I don't really like people telling me what to think or feel, and so sometimes I would just be very dismissive. I mean, nobody would know that because I'm sitting there in silence, but eventually when I kind of got out of my own way, because that was just being contrarian and stubborn and frankly immature, I was able to try things on, and that's why I'm suggesting things. But I would try something on, and if I experienced it, then I developed faith in it, and that's how I developed faith, which is actually the way that the Buddha taught. You know, he said, don't believe in what I say or any of people that you might think are wise say unless you've experienced something for yourself. I thought, oh, I can listen to that person at least, you know. So we want to try things on, and so I'm not suggesting that I know better than you, but I am going to offer some things for you to see, you know, if it works for you or not. That's why I always give that little caveat, because I won't tell you what to think or feel. Not my nature. So I want to just offer another way to be in the body, though, that might be helpful, and that is through a body scan. And it's going to be a body scan of without emotional or feeling tone overlay, okay? So you may or may not have experienced this before. So let's just sit for another about 10 minutes. And again, if you can enter into any of these practices with some curiosity, that always helps. So we'll make a kind invitation to our mind to pay attention on purpose. and follow along as best as we can. And when it's not comfortable for you to follow along in a particular area of your body, which might be the case, then just skip over it and catch up to the next place that is okay for you. Because, you know, we're not, for different reasons, we're in the body differently. You know, there are things like trauma that are very real and that rest in the body. And that doesn't mean that you need to go in and negotiate that today. If there's an area of your body that you're not so comfortable with, then feel free just to skip it and not feel badly about that. Okay? But let's start by noticing our right foot. See if you can sense the sole of your right foot, the hills and valleys of it, the arch, the heel. And see if you can feel the toes of your right foot. Maybe you feel the sock, maybe they're exposed to the air. But as you're sensing the toes of the right foot, can you feel not only where they touch, but where there might be space between them? And then shift your attention over to your left foot and see if you can feel the toenails on your toes. Can you sense the back of the left heel? And then shift your awareness up a little bit and see if you can feel both ankles, either one at a time or both together. Just sense the ankle joint. If there's any sensation in there. In either one or both. And then draw your attention up into your calves. As you notice your calves, you might feel lightness or pressure, softness or hardness. What can you feel in your calf muscles? And then notice the back of your knees, that little crevice. Maybe you feel your pants pressing into the crevice. Maybe you feel the thigh and the calf touching and not so much the crevice of the back of the knee. And then shift your attention to the front of your knee and see if you can notice any sensations in the kneecap. Or maybe the skin that wraps around the knees. Or even the space between your kneecap and the joint of your knee. Maybe you sense that space. And then draw your awareness into your thighs. And notice the length of the thigh bones. Maybe you can sense the weight of your thigh bones. Maybe you feel the muscles of your thighs. What they're pressing into. What they're touching. Whether they're soft or hard, or maybe not much sensation. Can you sense the hip socket where the thigh bone nestles into? What can you feel about the weight of your hips? Can you feel your sit bones in the chair or on the cushion? Does one sit bone have a little bit more sensation than the other? Is there more weight on one side than the other? Sense your belly, whatever it feels like. Maybe feel your pants around your belly. Maybe you notice the inside of your belly. Maybe feel breath in the belly. What can you feel in your lower back? Can you feel the curve? Is there sensation? Is it touching the chair? Allow your mind's eye to move up your spine. Can you sense the different vertebrae, or do you feel the spine is just one long piece? Can you notice the area of your spine where your ribs attach? What can you feel about your rib cages? A rib cage each side. Is there any movement in the rib cage? What about your lungs? Can you feel your lungs? What are the sensations in your lungs if you can sense it? Can you feel your collarbones? Do they move with breath? How about your shoulders? Is one shoulder higher? Does one shoulder have more sensation than the other? How about your shoulder blades? Can you sense the shoulder blades? Are they like plates? Do they rest on your back? What can you feel in your throat? Can you feel the tongue, the root of the tongue, as it falls down your throat? The back of your neck? About your jaw. What can you feel in your jaw? Are your teeth touching each other? Or is there a little space between your upper and lower teeth? What can you sense in your tongue? In your mouth? Where is it touching? Are your lips together, or is there a little bit of space between them? What are the sensations in your lips? What can you sense right at the entrance of your nostrils? Can you feel the breath sweeping in and out? Is there any space between your eyebrows? What do the ear canals feel like, if you can feel anything in there? That little hollow. What about your scalp? Can you sense your scalp as it surrounds your skull? How are your arms placed right now? Can you feel the space between your arm and your torso? About the elbow crease? Any sensation in either of your elbow creases? feel in your wrist or wrists. Notice the position of your hands. Can you sense one hand more than another? Is there heat or coolness in your hands? One can be different than the other. Can you feel the weight of your fingernails? Now find your breath. Very, very softly increase your breath, but without rushing or forcing so much. Just bring in a little bit more air. Allow that breath just to sweep through just a little bit more fully. Allow that air just to sweep out just a little bit more fully. To breathe in, breathe out, just a little bit more, very tenderly, very softly, but a little bit more full. And when you're ready, allow your eyes to slowly open again. And as your eyes open, keep your gaze quite soft if you can, so that your eyes are resting more towards the back of your head, as if your eyes are receiving, not looking out, not rushing, but just receiving a little bit more light, a little bit more form, a little bit more color. And as your eyes are opened, see if you can still sense your body as a whole or a part of your body, whatever you can connect with. See if you can notice where your breath is with your eyes opened. And then to feel a little bit of a difference, we'll do something pretty simple, which is just stand. So if you're lying down, you don't have to do this unless you want to, but very slowly just begin to stand up. And as you stand, see if you can sense a difference in how you feel standing. Maybe it's a difference in weight or just presence, maybe your breath. And then let's sit down again. So that body scan was without any coloring or flavoring. You might have noticed that. So I wasn't asking you to relax or soften or imagine or think any differently about anything that you were feeling or sensing, yeah? But what I was aiming to do was just to talk you and walk you through your body from the feet up. Because if we are not so connected with the body yet, taking a tour of it systematically gets us to, well, can help us begin to get to know the body. And often it is revealing as to where we want to be and where we don't, if you don't already know that. And again, it's perfectly okay, for whatever the reasons are, to skip parts of your body for now. I mean, eventually you can include all parts of your body, whether they're comfortable or not so comfortable. But maybe for today you wanted to skip for whatever reason. So we walk into the body in a way, walk in metaphorically, as if we were walking into our house or our home. And we do that over and over again. And we're going to begin to notice, oh, wow, I didn't realize that that was all piled up in the corner over there. Oh, geez, have to do some dusting. I haven't cleaned out that closet in a while. There's a lot of stuff in there. We know that by looking over and over and over again, seeing where we live most and most comfortably. Where is familiar, where isn't yet. Why we might want to organize a closet, give some things away, or even call in a repair person to give us some help. So that systematic walking through like that, without any trying to do anything different but just to be with sensations as they are, parts of the body as they are, can be quite helpful because it familiarizes ourselves with this territory of our bodies. And as we become more and more sensitive, as we've been saying all morning really, is as we become more and more sensitive to this body, then we begin to hear and know its signals as they're arising rather than when they've transformed into a strong emotion or a heavy thought, or we've even just lost our ways and gotten completely taken over by something, right? So we want to be able to walk into the house of our body and eventually make it more and more like a home so that we know what's going on at any given moment and that we have choices about how we're going to be in the areas of our body that we get to know. Does that make sense? So what I'd like to do is offer a short bio break, and then we'll come back and do one more practice before lunch. So we'll take 10 minutes. It's 12 o'clock now. Okay, so what I'd like to offer is that I'll come back in here a little early from lunch, for those of you who have questions, who were waiting. So if you want to ask me a question privately, I'll just come back a few minutes early. And I was just told we should take our lunch break a little earlier than I had said, so we'll break at 12:30 for lunch. So just to parenthetically go over, to give you a little bit of an overview of what we've done so far this morning, because I'm building, obviously, is that we started by just paying attention, being mindful of the body and the breath this morning. We started by just noticing sensations as they were or as they are. And hopefully that brought you through different parts or invited you into different areas of your body. So it's almost as if when we're paying attention to the body, when we're mindful of the body, a little itch will come up like over here and say, oh, feel me. And then maybe a little tension will start to happen over here and you say, oh, feel this. Or notice that, oh, the sun is hitting my shoulder, warmth, or coolness, or tingling, or tickly. And so it's as if the mind, as the heart mind, really, is just waiting to be beckoned to notice something that's going on in the body. Does that make sense? It's like, I'm just going to sit here and be available, and my body will say, tingle, 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 or pressure, or, you know, rumble, or discomfort, even pain. And so we go through the body like that, wherever it's calling us. Like, come over here, pay attention to me, pay attention to me, pay attention to me. And then we paid attention to breath, which is also a combination or culmination of sensations. Lots of different sensations of breath, and that's also being mindful of the body. Yeah. And then we did a little body scan that walked us through step by step the body and noticed it just as it is. So paying attention on purpose, but in a very deliberate way, to get to walk through the body and go from room to room or area to area with my guidance, yeah. And that, again, was just to notice sensation, just sensation, or lack of sensation even. You know, I mean, it took me a long time to feel anything in the back of my knee or to even notice that my fingernails actually had pressure, you know, that I could actually feel that. So, you know, whether you felt it or not is, you know, that's going to be a matter of how much time you've spent in your body, because this is something that we can get to know. It's ours. We live in it. We can get to know it a little bit more. So whether you felt those details or not, don't worry. You can if you're interested in it. You just have to keep going back through or taking your time and progressively walking yourself into your body over and over again to get to know it. So, and we've talked a little bit about how we add emotions and thoughts to whatever the body is sensing. So we sensitize ourselves to the body so that we can begin to listen to it. But we also want to begin to distinguish between what the body is saying just as sensation and what the body might be telling us as far as this is about to turn into an emotional response. This is about to send you into thinking about X, Y, Z. So those are two different territories. Do you know what I mean? One is just getting sensitive to this landscape, because we're not a lot of the times. And there's no shame in that. That's okay. But part of what we're practicing is to begin to walk back in, to begin to get to know, to reacquaint, to have communication, to sense the body as a whole more and more, where we're comfortable. I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons why we may not be comfortable exactly everywhere in our body, and that's okay too. So that I'm not expecting everybody just to walk through every area of your body today. But we reacquaint, get to know, start to sense a little bit more sensitively what's going on in the landscape of the body or inside the body. And then we can start to put the mind and the heart in the mix to know what the associations are. What can lead to what? Because really, we're not trying to divorce ourselves from what we think and feel. But we are teasing apart the difference between noticing sensations as they are and thoughts and feelings about sensations. Or sensations, thoughts, and feelings, just as three components or facets of our experience of being. Yeah? So this next practice that we'll do is something that I kind of stumbled into early on in my meditation career. I now call it a career. I call myself a contemplative, you know, because I spent like almost 40 years in these practices and teaching them. That didn't used to be a career. It still may not be in many people's mind. I know my family's mind, it's not a career. But I tease myself about it. At any rate, this is early on, and when I started to practice, I started having these associations between my body and it being a house. And so this just sort of organically arose for me, and it's something I've been teaching now for 30-plus years. So I'm going to walk you through, talk you through how you might feel or live in your own body emotionally and mentally, somatically, in the felt sense-wise, right? So we're going to bring in heart-mind. We're going to bring in where we live, where we don't, how we feel about things as an additional understanding or layer or level of understanding of emotions and the body, okay? So for this, we want to close your eyes, if you're comfortable closing your eyes. Because it's going to involve a little bit of visualization. Now, if you're not a visual person per se, that's okay. Then what I'd invite you to do is just get a sense, an intuitive sense. It could come up visually. It could also come in through just how you breathe or how you feel sensorially in different parts of your body. So not everybody will have a visual impact or a visual experience. You may have an experience more in a tone of sensation or intuition, and that's fine too. Okay? So imagine, if you will, that your torso is your house. So there's not a lot of emotional or mental configurations or memories or feelings about the skull or what goes on inside the skull. Generally, where we stash and store and notice feelings and thoughts and emotions in the body is in the torso. So from the pelvic floor to the top of the neck. And sometimes we feel things in our limbs, but not as typically. So we're going to just isolate the house to being below the head to the pelvic floor or from the pelvic floor all the way up to the top of the neck. And if you can get an image of your house, what would it look like? What's your body house look like on the outside? Maybe you have an image maybe not. But maybe you can sense the environment that your house is in. Is it by the ocean, in the woods? Is it in the mountains? Is it in a city or a town? Just go with your immediate sense without editing. Be as childlike and fanciful as you can allow. If you were to find a front door, where would it be? Where in your body / house would your front door be? It can be anywhere. If you can walk inside, or just get a sense of walking inside, just imagine it, or you can feel it, where would you get a sense of the brightest place of your body? Where's the most light? Where is it most light when you metaphorically look around your body, your house? Isn't there an area that seems the lightest, the brightest? Is there an area of your body, your house, where you've managed to store away or stash away all your childhood toys? Where would that be in your body? What's it like in that little area or that area where you've kept your childhood memories and toys? What does it feel like? Is it open and spacious? Is it crowded? Is it comfortable, not comfortable? Can you breathe in that place? Maybe it's not visual, but you sense it in terms of being spacious for breath or not. Is there a part of your house, your body, where your parents come and stay? Or maybe they've never left, but they have a little particular place where they live in your body, in your house. What's it like in there? And this could be your parents of origin. It could be your parents of choice. Is there an area of your body, of your house, that feels really crowded? Maybe it's like a closet or a space where you've just stashed a lot of stuff. It doesn't feel like there's much room or much air. Maybe it even feels like a burden to even look at it. Where's the most comfortable area of your body, your house? Where is it easy to breathe? Where do you feel soft and spacious? Where do you go when you need to just take a little break? Where is the most familiar area? Is there an area of your body, your house, that feels dark and foreboding? An area you know it's there because this is your body. You've lived in it for as many years as you've been around. But it's just an area that you don't know, don't want to know maybe, that you just sort of skip over. And it could also be an area that you can't even really readily breathe into. And is there a place or an area of your body that, if you could get some help, a repair person could come in and help you with something, what would you ask them to help you with? And finally, do you want to move? Or can you imagine staying and maybe rearranging, maybe clearing out a little, making some different space, or opening the windows, airing things out? Starting again. Even redecorating. And keeping your eyes closed so everybody has some privacy. If there's an area of your body, your house, that felt crowded or dark or uncomfortable at all, place a hand, or if you need two hands, in that place or those places. Where would that be? It could be a place that just doesn't have a whole lot of association for you right now or feeling. Wherever your hand or your hands are, is that an area where you feel discomfort? Physical discomfort or emotional discomfort, or both? Wherever your hand or your hands are, is this an area of your body that you can easily breathe into or not? Allow your hands to come down and take a couple of really deep sweeping breaths, opening windows and doors. Just air out the body for a moment. This long sweeping breath. And when you're ready, allow your eyes to slowly open. So that is a way of bringing in how we associate and think and feel about our body. Now, some of you might have gotten images. Some of you might have just associated with tightness or breath, light or dark areas. You know, it comes in so many different ways. There's no one way to experience that at all. And you might have felt some areas that were pleasant and some that you didn't know even were unpleasant, but maybe you just sort of skipped over them. It's like, you know, when you go away from your house or your apartment for a little while and you walk back in, you're like, wow, I didn't even notice those piles of magazines. So sometimes, you know, walking back in, we notice things differently. But it's very important to honor how we feel about our body and where we've stashed and stored things, because we do. Because the body senses, feels thoughts and emotions before they're cognized, that means that there are a lot of things that we don't know about it yet. unless we've been, you know, doing this kind of work for a really long time. And that's because, especially early on in our human career, we weren't necessarily conscious of everything that we tamp down in the body. It's a coping mechanism, and for very good reasons, to put things away, stash things down. If something's not made conscious or recognized, it doesn't magically disappear. It goes into the tissue of the body. And some of our work as adults is to negotiate that, to recognize that, to be with it in a way that's kind and thoughtful and careful and considerate. And to know also that a lot of our coping mechanisms were for very, very good reasons, and we want to honor that too. And not everything is ready to be announced, pronounced, or looked at, and that's all right. That's perfectly okay. We each have our own time of evolving, transforming, being with. You know, nobody can name that for us. But not to blame ourselves, not to feel ashamed of anything, or embarrassed, or criticize, but just to start to slowly get to know. Oh, well, this is the area of my body, for instance, that I would tighten up when I was a kid and I wasn't comfortable. Okay. And by going into that area of our body, for instance, like here, for me, and getting to know it, I now can sense when it just starts to contract or constrict a little bit, and it's usually when I'm not comfortable. And who is comfortable all the time? So when I feel a little bit threatened or a little embarrassed or a little bit self-conscious, that's the first place I'll sense it, if I'm paying attention. And it's really tiny. It's just a tiny little grab. But there can be more obvious places like shoulders, for instance. You know, so you're not comfortable, or somebody's calling you out, or, you know, you're at work and you're the person that's in charge of you. If you have a boss is saying, you know, I want you to do this or something, and your shoulders are going like that. Oh, that's an obvious one, but it is a place that we hold a lot of tension, right? So some of the places that we stash or store or relate or don't relate to are obvious, and some are a little bit more subtle and nuanced and a little bit more secret gems. So what we're doing today is we're figuring, you know, trying out different ways to get to know the landscape of the body so that we can begin to tend to both the emotions that the body holds and how we're going to relate to emotions, or how we can relate to the emotions by noticing what the body is saying before the emotions take over. You see how that can work both ways? But A, number one, what we're trying to do is sensitize ourselves. And that's what mindfulness of the body is really all about. Knowing sensations as sensations, but then also part of the felt sense is cognizing. Oh, this sensation has an association with this thought and this feeling. It's putting pieces together. This is how we get to know ourselves in full. It doesn't matter which door we enter into first, but just that we get a fuller picture eventually. And so oftentimes we've walked in through the door of telling our story. Not just, to ourselves over and over again. Like, that's called identification. Identification of self, and there's nothing wrong with that. And then often when things are troubling us, we'll talk to somebody else about what's troubling us, and we are solidifying the story sometimes that way. And so it can be helpful to drop the story, we know it, or tell the story and also know the somatic experience of it, so that we can concurrently relate to ourselves in different ways, not just one way, not just another way. So we're inviting ourselves to know the body in terms of the body as the body that has sensations that arise and pass and fall away, just like the breath, which we'll practice a little bit later after lunch, of the breath as being a mirror to heart and mind. It's always relating the breath. It's always mirroring. And then we notice the mirror, the associations on their own. So there's the way the body feels or the way sensations are, and then there's the way we feel about sensations. We're teasing them apart, and whichever comes first, that's what we can pay attention to. So the body as house is something that is interesting to try over and over again. So it was recorded if you want to do it again. And we'll tease it apart a little bit more this afternoon after lunch in different ways. But as you're having your lunch, you're outside, you're either relating to others or being by yourself and being in nature, you know, there's great places to walk down here and just be in this beautiful environment that we're lucky to be in. See if you can keep that awareness that I mentioned when we first would open our eyes of noticing what's going on in the body even though your eyes are opened, so that as you're speaking or eating, just be aware of different parts of your body, what it's saying, not necessarily in like English language, for instance, but just in terms of sensation. Just notice how your body is relating to what you're doing as much as you can. Okay? So it's a lot. Let it sink in. You know, you can talk about it or not, but just let it settle in a way that's comfortable for you. And then we'll meet back here at 1:45. Okay? Enjoy your lunch. Does everybody know where to go? Okay. Because if you need suggestions, you can ask anybody that's a Spirit Rock volunteer or working here.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.